Ever feel like your body just isn't bouncing back like it used to? That might just be your mitochondria slowing down. Enter MitoPure. MitoPure is clinically proven to help clear out the old, worn-out mitochondria, the energy centers of your body, to give you the reboot you need from the inside out. Our mitochondria is connected to everything. Strength, endurance, you know, our skin, our hair, our nails. So this for me is an incredibly easy product because you can either take your capsules or now they have these gummies that I take that I think are delicious. So I take it with breakfast, first meal of the day, and it's with my morning supplements and very easy to take. It's actually enjoyable to take. So it's become routine over the last 2 years and I will not travel without it. Right now, Timeline is offering 20% off your first order of MitoPure. Go to timeline.com/stronger. That's timeline.com/stronger for 20% off. Before we get to the episode, I just want to shout out The Post for being the official home of the Stronger podcast in Manhattan. The Post is the only private membership network connecting athletes turned business leaders. And we love recording the show at their facility. Check them out over at thepost.co. And don't forget, on every episode of Stronger, we take your calls and I want to hear from you. If you have any questions for me and one of my guests, call 1-855-348-3546. Leave a message anytime. And if your question is a good fit, we'll have you on a future episode of Stronger. That's 1-855-348-3546. Let's get to the show.
Blind Nil Audio.
Strength is bi-directional.
Yeah. Can you explain that a little
bit? Yeah. Physical strength begets mental strength.
Mental strength.
It's a bi-directional relationship. A strong body cannot exist with a weak mind.
I agree.
And a weak mind will never create a strong body.
Welcome to Stronger. Today I'm joined by Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, one of the world's leading experts in functional medicine. We're diving into how much protein you actually need in your diet and breaking down some of the most common myths around nutrition. She's not only one of the brightest minds in the field, she's also one of my favorite people. I'm Don Saladino. Let's get stronger with Dr. Gabrielle Lyon.
I've been fortunate enough to have some pretty amazing people in my life. This podcast for me is not about how many followers does someone have to come on. This podcast is about two things. Are you incredibly knowledgeable in your field? But the most important is, are you an exceptional human? I want people who come on who are exceptional people. But I mean, I think that's what I want out of today. This is not, you're not allowed to come on this once. I mean, obviously,
to be fair, you are one of my best friends. So I'm going to lean
on you a few times in the future for this. Like you're going to have to be, but I think today what I want is I want people to kind of learn about you as the human, because I think as smart as you are and all these things that you have going on, I think that's the part where when people find that out, they're going to be like, oh my God.
Do you want to know that's the thing I'm most proud of?
You should be.
I don't know if you know that. I have a lot of education.
Yeah.
And I think that I've contributed a lot. You know, I'm still writing and publishing. But the thing I'm most proud of, I mean, aside from my children, and it's so weird to say, I hope no one listens to this episode.
Oh, they will.
Because it's kind of embarrassing. But I is the person I am. I think that character is really important. And I don't know. It's like the most important thing to me.
Well, I mean, it's also, you've surrounded yourself with great people. You've got your husband, Shane, is, I mean, first off, I think he's probably one of the most impressive human beings that I've met. And he's the most humble.
So humble.
Which is, it's like,
so
talk
humble.
About putting you in check. If you're ever having a day, you get around saying, like, what are you? I was a former Navy SEAL. What are you doing now? I'm a urologist. And it's just like everything about him, he's just brilliant. And he's just one of those guys that you get together with. And I remember him and I sitting in your kitchen because he's working all day. And we're up at
he's
9.
He's published 51 papers.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. we're sitting up at 9 p.m. hysterically laughing about The King of Tulsa, which is some like Stallone show. And we're just sitting there and I'm like, and he's like, and he turns around to me recently. He's like, yeah, I'm running Boston tomorrow. I'm like, wait, Boston, like the marathon? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, did you train? He's like, yeah, I ran like 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, you're just going to run Boston? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, and I knew. And then the second, I wasn't like, oh, he's not prepared. I'm just like, oh, I wonder how he's going to feel after he finishes. And then after, I'm like, how'd you feel? And he's like, fine. I'm like, and he's chafing. So like, funny. Did all the skin on your toes come off? And he's just like, no, I was fine. He goes, I didn't run like my fastest time, but I was fine. I'm like, Shane, like maybe we should write a program on like two workouts.
That's hysterical.
So your journey, I mean, it's been, this is not something that happened overnight.
Oh my God. No.
I mean, this has been, no. I mean, you and I have known each other how many years now? It's got to be going on. It's over a decade easily. It's easily over a decade. We've gone through a lot.
Yes, we have.
We've gone to a lot of highs, a lot of lows. Yep. That's what people don't realize is the amount
of drive days.
The drive. Oh.
I just can't believe, I know this isn't about you, but now having two little children and watching, you know, people see you and see you very successful and as if it was so easy and you're an influence. Like, you're none of those things. No. You're a really good businessman. And I, you know, having two little kids and a husband that's in residency working 120 hours, I just don't know how you were commuting from Long Island to just managing that massive endeavor.
It was big, but now I'm looking at you with two little kids,
yeah.
You know, and your husband who's working crazy hours and the amount of visibility you have for the public, right? Yeah. How they see you and the amount of work and the amount of travel. It's, you know, you're one of the hardest working people I've ever met.
I probably drink enough caffeine to kill a draft horse and I'm not saying that's a great idea, but
you gotta go.
I am really okay with very hard work.
Yep. You actually thrive on it.
I do.
Yeah. If you're one of those people that if you're sitting around,
it I actually, wouldn't know what to do. I would call you with anxiety, but it's not even that. It's, there's a lot to get done. I was working on my book on the way over.
It's your second.
On my book. You know, people say, man, I don't know how you do it. And I think to myself, I don't know if it's more than the next person because we all have things that we're juggling. Do you know what I mean? I think I have a lot of discernment and I'm able to hyper focus and execute. But there's a lot to do.
The books are something that came on recently. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because I saw you go from the Ash Center.
Can we also be fair when I... when we first met and I was sitting in the, we should tell the story.
Talk about it. Why?
Okay. So we were sitting, you've been one of my biggest supporters.
Thank you.
I mean, a book comes out, you're there, whatever it is. Hey, Don,
whatever it is.
It's like, you're there. Yep. And I had just finished fellowship. I did my fellowship at WashU, which is an incredibly difficult fellowship in nutritional sciences and geriatrics. And I was meeting with one of your high profile patients. I don't know if you remember who it is, but I do.
Okay.
And we had done extensive testing and I was sitting there and giving him kind of a spiel. And afterwards, you're like, gee, Doc G, which by the way, you still call me.
I still
me,
call her.
Which is hysterical.
I still call her Dr. Gabrielle.
Doc G. You're like, you cannot, and you said it nicely, but you were like, you can't really communicate to people like that. They're never, it's never going to land. You're never going to get to the end result. And it was in that moment, it really changed the way that I communicate to the public. And to my patients.
You became so relatable. Even on the stage, the last, every time I've seen you at your event over the last few years, there's just been this evolution where, not saying you were ever scripted, but I feel like you're able to come out there
tense.
And be yourself. That, yeah, you were intense, but.
No, I was more tense. It was this is the information. This was the information.
That's fair.
And there has to be an evolution if you really want to ultimately relate to people.
But she started doing something I really respected.
Brushing my teeth. Oh. Okay.
She started doing something I really respected. And that was, I think a lot of people in your position, they always regurgitate the science.
Oh, never.
You will discuss the science, you'll give your opinion, or you'll say, there isn't enough science out on this. I find that refreshing because I am not leaning to you not only as one of my closest friends, best, but someone that I'm like, I confide in. I am more interested in your opinion than six people in a lab for 6 months doing tests. I am, because I feel like you have this level of research experience, practical experience. You have a thought process. Mm-hmm. I am coming to you not because I want you to regurgitate all the science that's out there. I want to hear from you. Yeah. What is going on? Because it's so confusing for most people to go to a PubMed paper.
Nor should they be.
But they're like, well, where's research? Where do I read? Who do I listen to? And it's a regurgitation. I need to start hearing, this is the science that's out on this, and this is what I think.
Yeah.
That's special.
Well, that comes from right now we're in a landscape that has never existed before.
How so?
Well, we have social media and we have access to more information than we have ever had. And also there is an increase in publishing, and it doesn't mean that it's publishing good data.
Right.
To be fair, I started my career over 20 years ago, learning from some of the best world-class scientists. And I don't even think we had PubMed. I had to go to the library and get the journal articles, which is insane.
And time consuming.
Oh my God. It's still time consuming.
That's what I'm impressed about. I don't know how you're able to get all that data down. That's a lot.
Well, here's what you end up doing. If you are trained in the sciences, then you're trained how to think about it. Mm. But right now, all you have to do to become an expert or quote world leading expert is, I don't know, have 100,000 on Instagram and put that in the title, and you will see individuals say immunology expert. Mm. And so in my world, an expert like that would be someone who did a medical residency or a PhD in immunology, not someone who calls themselves an expert. And that never happened before, which further convolutes the science. And this landscape is going to be more tricky than ever before. Because it is actually a matter of life or death.
People ask me this all the time. How do we start governing this a bit? There's so much content out there.
Yeah.
And a lot of it now is just fake. It's just made up just to get clickbait. Mm-hmm. And I feel bad for the general pop because it's not their job to learn. They're looking at someone with a large following. They think credibility should come with that, which it doesn't. And people ask me all the time, how do we start actually, some of the biohackers now are saying, not to mention names, because I don't like to get.
No.
But there are a couple of them out there that are saying some things that you're like, wait a second, that's not accurate. That's not right.
You have to educate the public to say, who are you going to for information?
Yeah.
And part of the reason that it's happening is because people have been so unhappy with the medical information and just the way that our medical care is. And so they are then forced to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. They're going to other people because they're looking for answers. Traditional Western medicine is not designed to deal with longevity or wellness. It's designed to treat illness. How would someone listening to this go, gosh, I need to figure out how to get good information? What they would do is they would pick a handful of reputable people and tune out the noise.
And tune out the noise. Too many cooks in the kitchen is a problem.
But you have to develop critical thinking. And you have to say, okay, what is this person's credentials? Frankly, credentials matter. If you are truly an expert, then you've done the work and the time and that you've put in the reps. It's the only way. And then you go back, and typically the people that are doing really good science, you'll never know who they are, which is exactly why I did my podcast. You don't know who the world leading expert is in infertility for women, do you?
No.
I do. Her name's Melanie Cree. She's an MD, PhD. Out of the 8 studies of Ozempic and fertility, she published 2 of them.
Wow.
There's only 8 studies.
Wow.
She published 2. And then really understanding that there are a lot of different perspectives and 2 things can be right at the same time.
Right.
And individuals that have good science, it's not about defensiveness and it's not about ego. It really is, okay, well, what does the science say? And how do we begin to think about it?
Yeah.
I'll give you an example, which I called you because I was pretty annoyed. Of course, you're usually my first call.
Thank you.
The New York Times interviewed me about protein. Do you remember that?
That was recently.
So this is an example. So the New York Times, we know that their reach is massive. It's legacy media. And they called me because they were doing an article on, is the RDA enough? And for the listener, RDA is a recommended daily allowance of protein. Mm-hmm. And it's how much protein we should have to prevent deficiencies. It's the minimum number.
Yeah, right? Sure.
And the RDA in and of itself hasn't changed in 40 years.
No.
It is also based on a technique from the early 1900s for animal agriculture to determine nitrogen balance. Now, I'm asking you a question. Do you know the health outcome of nitrogen balance in a human?
Do I know the health outcome?
Yeah.
No.
I don't know anyone who knows that.
No.
The question isn't, is the RDA enough? The question is the RDA a relevant number?
Right. Right. And they completely ignored that.
Totally ignored it.
Yeah. They also, I don't even want to say in fairness to them, but I think their problem is a lot of these people writing the articles aren't exactly well versed.
Right. No,
and they shouldn't be having the conversation to begin with.
They were vegan activists.
Oh, yeah.
Vegan vegetarian.
Yeah. Your recommendation is 1 gram of protein per pound of ideal body weight.
Or target body weight.
Sure.
Target body weight. And listen, we're still thinking about the RDA. The RDA is an irrelevant number.
It's irrelevant.
And we have new ways of studying it, and it's double the RDA. So closer to 1.6 grams per kg or close to 1 gram per pound target body weight.
And there's really, I mean, talking about, there's really three macronutrients. I mean, there's three macronutrients. You have protein, you have your carbs, and your fats.
Yeah. The most important macronutrient is protein.
It's protein.
It is essential. Dietary protein, we need more as we age. We don't need less. Fats and carbs, fine, it's kind of irrelevant. You decide if you're metabolically healthy, you can have more or less carbs. But if you are overweight, looking to lose weight, then you have to watch your carbs. But dietary protein, we still have to get that right.
100%. And I've always gone a little higher because I feel like some of that protein, I'm measuring total protein. So when you remove the animal protein from there, all right, you know, I'm 210 pounds. When you look at animal protein during the day, I probably get about 220. So a little higher. And then another 30 grams is coming from, you know, plant sources.
We're not gonna count
that. Yeah.
I did a calculation with Don Lehman this morning.
Yeah.
We looked at about 3 ounces of chicken. How many almonds do you think it would take to equal out those amino acids?
My guess?
Yeah. Guess.
100.
Anyone else? Like over 400.
Wow.
You would need over 400 almonds.
You're right. That was a bad guess.
No. It was a great guess. Think about that. 400 almonds.
Yeah.
This episode of Stronger is brought to you by David Protein. Packed with 28 grams of protein, only 150 calories, and zero sugar, David Protein bars are great for staying full and hitting your protein goals without added junk. So in my community of thousands of people, they always ask me, can you recommend a bar? And in the past, I haven't, because I never liked the ingredients that went into a bar. I thought they were chalky. I thought they were high in sugar, and they used a lot of sweeteners and binders. David Protein bars are the first product that I've ever used that I feel like I can eat every day. And I recommend them to all of my clients. I've tried all the flavors and I absolutely love them. But the one flavor I feel like I keep going back to is that chocolate chip cookie dough. I'm just a huge fan of that flavor to begin with. So now that David has that flavor, I feel like that's what I'm grabbing every single time. Right now, David is offering my listeners a deal to buy 4 cartons and get the fifth free at davidprotein.com/stronger. That's davidprotein.com/stronger to get your fifth carton for free. Humans aren't perfect, but David is. Give this product a try.
What percentage of the population do you think are under-proteined from what you're recommending?
So according to the Healthy Eating Index, about 45% of Americans.
It's like half the population.
Yeah.
Is not getting enough protein.
According to the dietary guidelines.
Then
The Healthy Eating Index. So there's the RDA, which is the minimum.
Right.
And then there's the dietary guidelines, and then there's the NHANES data set. So most people are not getting enough dairy. I think 95% of the population is not. 95% or more is over the recommendation for refined carbs and grains.
95%.
Yeah, 95%. And also, again, there's a little nuance to this conversation, because people are measuring this conversation against the RDA. But the RDA is the wrong number.
Why are they still valuing something from 100 years ago?
We need it. It's complicated.
What's your opinion? Again, we're not saying...
Yeah, yeah. So here's my opinion.
This is your opinion.
I think that we have the data, and that the data is clear that we need closer to 1.2 grams per kg or 1.6. That data is clear from emerging technology. I believe that there is challenges with making and changing recommendations because we don't eat in a silo. So for example, let's say we increase the recommendation for dietary protein. the World Health Organization is going to have one country that is now doubling this baseline protein recommendation because it's actually a luxury. To be able to have the quality food that we have here, it's luxury and it's money. And then there's one more thing. Are you ready for this? The beef industry, these protein industries, or these whole foods are commodities. Mm. Dairy is a commodity. It comes from farmers, or a lot of the meat comes from small farms. Almonds, that's also a commodity. Whole foods are a commodity. Egg is a commodity. The egg, these commodities are under the USDA. They're governing bodies under the USDA. The USDA is very strict on what claims can be made. For example, an egg might be able to say, like egg could say it's a good source of protein. But because it is under the USDA, it could never say, or milk, it's a better source of protein than almond juice.
Yeah, they can't go because it bastardizes
processed foods are under different regulation. And processed foods can make claims.
Right.
For example, that pretend meat, they can make claims. It can make environmental claims. It can make disparaging claims against other food products. But the whole foods cannot make statements to support their position.
What are they saying about these fake impossible meats, which are obviously we know that they're complete garbage.
It's garbage.
It's complete. But what are the plant based company? What is their defense? What is their defense when someone like you turns around and says this is clearly bad for you? What are they saying about that?
Well, they'll turn, and again, I'm just speaking from my opinion. They'll turn to an environmental statement, and they'll say, "Well, animal products are killing the planet, or animal or
which is
beef,
not, which is not
no. Beef consumption is down like 40%, and if beef was responsible for cancer and obesity and all these things, then how is it that we are sicker? Heart disease? How come we have higher levels of heart disease and all of these other illnesses if the thing that is causing it, the consumption, is down 40%?
And I don't understand how they even make those claims.
I always allude back
to this. My dad's mom and her four sisters, all lived to be the ages of like 96 and 105. They ate meat several times a day, their entire life. So I'm like, when you look at something like that, and on the other hand, I have a friend of mine who had to go in for heart surgery at 50. He's a vegan.
Okay.
You know, but that's just one case. Like, what are they saying? How can they even prove? Or
they don't.
It's made up. It's complete. It's false.
The other part that I didn't say is that the commodities marketing budget, collectively, all of them pool their resources together, is about $750,000. $750,000.
For what?
For their marketing budget. All of them. One processed food, one company, PepsiCo, its marketing budget is like $2
billion. Wow.
Whoever has the money controls the narrative. And they're very smart. They're marketing to influencers that think they're doing the right thing. And they become very dogmatic and then spread this message. The idea that cattle is killing the planet is ridiculous.
Yeah.
There's the majority of our land that we have is land that can graze cattle. It can't be used for crops. There's nothing to do with that land other than raise cattle. You cannot grow crops.
How the plate should look, I feel like it's your traditional. I explain, people, how do you eat? I'm like, I eat a high quality food diet. Like, what would be the closest to the diet that you eat? I'm like, maybe the Mediterranean, maybe you could call paleo, but I actually include grains in it because I can have that.
Yeah.
Like, it's probably in between those. I don't really know how to categorize or why we have to categorize how we eat. It's like your protein.
It's a good perspective.
I have my protein. I have my veg. And if I can, I'll get my fibrous carbohydrate. When I say fibrous carbohydrate, I don't categorize it as my greens. I categorize it as my sweet potato or my quinoa, or you know what? Maybe my jasmine rice doesn't have much fiber in it, but maybe I'm getting some from the greens. I need some more carbohydrates. It's how my body runs really, really well. It's not, do you think that we've gotten a little bit too crazy in trying to differentiate how this one eats compared to this one, compared to this one?
Yeah, I think there's
what
a lot.
What do you tell people?
There's a lot of biodiversity. And humans are incredibly adaptable and we can thrive on a million different kinds of diets. But you have to recognize that there are fundamentals that we have to hit if you want to age well. And again, it's not about aesthetics. I think the biggest cultural misconception is that muscle and all of this stuff is about aesthetics.
That's not how I look at it either.
Who cares? It has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
I want to be able to...
Body armor.
Yeah, man. I want to be able to play with my kids. I want to know that if something happens or when something happens... I can't plan for that, but I definitely can prepare. And the more prepared I am, the more capable I am to be able to move through whatever life throws at me. Because it's not an if, it's a when.
Sure.
And so when you think about protein and you think about nutrition, you have to, or you think about your plate, you have to hit protein first. It doesn't have to be red 100%. Meat. I don't care.
And you don't care about going over either. I mean, there's not, has there been any data that shows like if you decided to go over, I've been very high on my protein my entire life.
But you also define high based on what? This is a good question.
I define high based off of my body weight. And if I'm getting around 1.5 grams per pound, most people would frown on that. It hasn't seemed to affect me negatively.
This is again, a little deeper nuance of the question. We've put labels as to what high and low is.
What do you consider high and low, or don't you?
Well, what I would consider low is the current recommendation.
Yes.
That's a low protein
100%
diet.
Agree. That's too low.
0.8 grams per kg or 0.37 grams per pound, that is a low protein diet. By definition, if we were to double that, that would be a moderate protein diet, not a high protein diet. So close to 1 gram per pound of target body weight is a moderate protein diet. Double that again, now you're talking about a high protein diet. But we create judgment on all
you
of these things.
You said doubling the recommended on 1 gram per pound.
Yeah. So 2 grams of protein per pound of body weight, that's a high protein diet. And we should mention why. We'll round out what the plate should look like. You start, you prioritize a high quality protein. You've got to think about fish, beef, chicken, eggs. If you are vegetarian, you could do soy, but you know, I think we should reconsider those, you know, thinking about that. Dairy is also a high quality protein. And then fiber, carbohydrates.
Big time.
Phytonutrients. You and I talk a lot about urolithin A. There's phytonutrients that I think are really
important. I love you got me turned on to that product.
Yes,
that MitoPure product is
but exceptional. Even MitoPure is amazing. And it's the compounds. So it's these anthocyanins and these postbiotics that are really critical that affect mitochondria and muscle health. And that becomes important to recognize. And the average American is not getting enough fiber. This gut microbiome thing is important, and it's been around for a long time, and we're just scratching the surface. And then frankly, fat, I don't care where it falls. And also, by the way, did you know that the majority of fat in steak is olive oil? It's monounsaturated fat.
Wow. I didn't know that, actually.
But people will say, oh my God.
So you don't care much about fat content?
I don't.
You're just like, hit your protein, this is your thought process. Hit your protein, get enough fiber.
Yeah.
That's basically what
you're
saying.
Get your carbs if you're training, and then fat, let the fat fall where you want it to fall.
Are you in that mindset of most women around 28 to 30 grams of fiber, most guys 38 to 40 around there?
Yeah. I mean, it just depends. Most people don't hit that.
Yeah.
Totally depends on the person. I will also be fair and say that there's variations in the gut microbiome, and that, you know, certain individuals can extract amino acids potentially from fiber, which is unusual. And I can't say that we know enough about it yet because it's really in rodent models, but we do see, you know, some vegan vegetarians do really well. And the question is, how are they not so protein deficient? And I think it has to do with the microbiome. The other thing that we should mention is, why do we actually need protein in the first place?
Muscle building block, isn't it?
Also, do you know that your body requires 250 to 300 grams a day for repair and maintenance, for protein turnover? And you become less efficient at this as you age. Your body replaces itself 4 times a year. That's interesting.
That is interesting.
And that's actually why you need protein. Yes, I mean, for building muscle, but everything else, skin, hair, nails, gut, liver, and you become less efficient at this. So if we were to lean on the current recommendations,
you're in trouble.
You know what you're going to look like. Don't be surprised by the end result.
So why for years were people talking about, well, it's going to be rough on your kidneys, rough on your liver. There's zero. It's complete bullshit. No, I think it's complete bullshit.
The data also supports what you're saying.
Yeah.
Again, that's complete bullshit. It just is so crucial to get this right. It is. It's life or death.
I almost want to challenge. This is what you've done. You're almost like taking a stand. What I feel like you're like challenging people. Try and overeat protein. Like go right ahead. Try and overeat protein. You're not going to overeat protein, and the fiber piece of it, it's hard. I've done preps for covers where I've tried to do it straight on sweet potato, where I'm trying to get 300 grams of carbs a day through only sweet potato. It is hard.
Yeah.
It is hard. When you're eating fibrous carbs like that, you ain't overeating. And you know what? I can almost guarantee anyone, if they went in every day and just tried to fill up too much on protein, I want to see what happens to your body composition.
Also, the data supports that people that are struggling with willpower, that protein augments willpower. If you have protein first thing in the morning.
Oh, you're not going to want to crave. You're not going to crave crap.
And it's the ultimate test of, are you really hungry?
Right.
Here's this dry chicken breast. Are you really hungry and you want it? Okay, then you're hungry. But the other thing is that
that's a good one. I never heard you say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you really hungry? Are you emotionally really hungry? Eating?
Yeah. Because that chicken breast does. If you don't want to eat that chicken breast, then yeah.
You're not hungry.
Yeah.
What about this idea that it's actually protein is 20 different amino acids? We're talking about it like it's one thing. It's not.
It's not.
And you think about antioxidants like glutathione.
Oh, yeah.
That the precursor for that is methionine, an amino acid that we need more of as we age. And, I think for the general public, and I think even for physicians and people in nutrition, it's very complicated. You look at the back of a label and it still just says protein. I don't even think we're close to getting to where we need to be.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
And we might not have to be, as long as you create a good nutrition plan and you stick to it. If we could minimize chaos and minimize the noise, I think people would really... they'd be able to transform their life.
I feel like it's kind of like politics, though.
Oh, it is.
It really is. And I'm not going to talk politics on here, nor would I ever.
I don't know. You're talking red meat, so that's kind of political. Well, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, it kind of but is,
that's
actually. No,
that's
but you're right.
Crazy.
They've weaponized food. 100% correct.
Weaponized food.
You're a Democrat or you're a Republican. It's like you're one or the other. You eat meat or you don't eat meat.
Right.
It's the same thing. And you can't speak your mind on things anymore. If I'm going to turn to a vegan and I'm going to say, I'm sorry, it's going to be more difficult for you to get all the amino acids that you need, all the protein you need off of a vegan diet. And they say, well, I'm having this and it's just as good. And I say, no, it's not. Scientifically, it's not, right?
What about creatine? What about B12? What about, we're talking about protein, but what about the other micronutrients?
Very important.
What about that?
Creatine's almost becoming like essential now. It's really funny.
I'm not going to say it is, but. Yeah, no, but I've heard someone say, we don't have a creatine deficiency. It's like, all right, dude, well, how do you want to age?
Yeah.
Okay. It's not about getting the bare minimum to be able to function.
Someone asked me the other day, like, do you take creatine? I'm like, for 30 years. I've been taking creatine monohydrate for 30 years. I used to see a doctor before you were ever a doctor, 16 years old. His name was Dr. Gary Wadler. He was on the congressional hearing for the steroid panel for Mark McGuire and Canseco and all that stuff that happened in baseball in the 90s. And at that time, I was 17, 18 years old, and I was binge drinking on the weekends.
You were?
I was.
I didn't know that.
I would train during the week, and we would go, me and my friends would go party on Saturday night, and we would get torched. So I was on creatine monohydrate. I remember Dr. Wadler turning to me. This is the guy who was interviewing Jose Canseco. This was the biggest thing in baseball going on. And he said, Saladino, it's the creatine. Get off the creatine. Hold on. It gets even better. So I turn around and I didn't listen to him. I didn't get off the creatine. I got off the alcohol and all my liver enzymes restored. And he goes, you got off the creatine, didn't you? And I looked at him. I go, yeah, I did. Just because I didn't want to hear it. I was a young kid. And he goes, I told you. And I just kind of nodded at him. This is no, God rest his soul. He's in heaven. I've learned so much from this guy. But that was, again, information coming from one of the smartest sources. This is 30 years ago.
It is unbelievable.
And it's incredible how even today we're just misinformed. The thing that's shocking now is that we have a lot of this research out and the information's in front of you. People, it's like politics. They'll just completely ignore it, even if it's in front of them.
How many doctors have you heard say, don't eat red meat because it's bad for your cholesterol?
Yeah.
You hear that?
Bullshit.
Sierra, do you hear that? Producer friend, do you hear that?
Bullshit.
They took cholesterol recommendations out of the guidelines in 2015.
Yeah. Complete bullshit.
They took out the guidelines that you have blood levels of cholesterol doesn't mean it's related to your dietary levels of cholesterol. I mean, maybe for a small percentage of people. But what happens is they're making global recommendations to masses of people based on exceptions. That's deadly.
Deadly.
The other thing that is critical, which I would love to see shift, is children. Our kids are very sedentary. And it's becoming normal for those kind of behaviors.
I think it starts. I think the schools are a massive problem.
When I was in
elementary school, I went to the elementary school that my kids went to. We used to have gym class every day. Yeah. I remember it was like a daily. I looked forward to it because it just got me out of the chair at a young age. I just wanted to move. Gym class every day. Now, I think they have it once, twice a week. I'm like, that should be a mandatory. Yeah. You're taking a growing child who sits, by the way, my kids start their homeroom at 7:45, 8 in the morning, and they sit till 2:30 in the afternoon.
That's insane.
It's terrible. You're a growing child.
Yeah. And I'm not so worried about the older generation. I'm not so worried about us because if you want to get better and you want to be healthy, the information's out there. You don't need to follow influencers. You can follow the science. You can pick a handful of trusted people that you look to be well-informed. But, you know, we do have to create an example for this next generation and dispel some of these myths, like they shouldn't be training or any of these
it's
other
bullshit.
Things.
It's bullshit. But even you know, now the schools are saying, oh, well, they need to spend their time in class. My kids for the last 4, 5, 6 years get free periods. They should have like one gym class a day where they're doing something a little more intense, and in another, give them credits for it, where they just walk. Like, you just move.
I love it.
Get out of the chair a bit. Watch how much more productive they're going to be during the day. Condense their schedule a little bit. Have them go in and focus on real life stuff. We can do a whole thing on kids right now. Internships, practical stuff.
Totally.
But
we should challenge them. So there's this saying that good times create weak men. Weak men create hard times.
Yeah.
Good times, easy times create weak men.
Yeah.
Weak men create hard times.
Yeah. No,
it makes sense. I do think that culturally we've really softened people.
Big time.
And that is, you know, we talk about health and we talk about muscle and we talk about protein, but what we're really talking about is building stronger, better humans.
Well, it starts in the house. I mean, let's shift to that, because the one thing I love that you've been doing is, you know, you'll throw posts up every day with you and Aries in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu class, you and Leo doing some activity. Your daughter and your son, your daughter is following what mom does on the balance beam the other day.
Unbelievable.
But this is not like, parents will ask, how do you get your kids to do it? I go, lead by example.
Yeah.
Because they see mama doing that and they see dad being active and you guys are an active family. They're going to follow.
And how many people have we worked with? We've worked with thousands. The saddest thing is when you see someone who spent 30 years still trying to undo habits that they've carried on from high school, teenage years.
Yeah.
If you want to really parent well, you have to recognize that.
Yep.
It's not about being too hard on these kids. It's about saving them from themselves, from these habits. I mean, you and I have seen people go through their entire life never being able to achieve energy, the body composition that they want, still struggling with food. And it has consumed an entire life. From my perspective, I think we should prevent that from the beginning.
Yep.
I want to instill habits that my children don't have to undo. And not only that, habits that they then don't even think about. There's no, oh, should I get up and train today? Oh, should I make this choice? Oh, should I not drink? Should I have good character? You know?
I think it starts in the house. And I've seen it with my children, because I'll be honest, there was a time early on where I was, I want to say I was second guessing my approach, but I was more thinking about my approach. And I was going into situations where I was, my kids would ask me questions and I was very cautious.
Yeah.
Because I know the situation I'm in, who I am, and what they look at me as, who they look at me as. And I did not want to create monsters. So the last thing I wanted to do was be too firm, too hard, to where I chased them away. I almost took a little bit of a different approach. Funny story, when Aries is how old now?
Five.
Five. Okay, Donnie.
Boy, do they love you. They were so.
Oh my God. Beautiful. They're beautiful kids. I'm not just saying. Gorgeous. Gorgeous kids.
And strong.
Strong.
Tough.
Strong and tough. Well, their parents are. Yeah. But my son was 6 years old.
I know this story. Was it the Tone story Dad, I want to come work out.
Like, no.
And you're like, this is what we do.
This is big boy stuff. Yeah. And then I let him come out. And I remember at that point, he started tagging along more. I'm looking out at the barn. Him and his friends are training. You know, weekend nights are hanging around. I'm thinking, are they going to be drinking? They're out in the jungle gym doing pull-ups. And granted, my son, you know, they have fun and they have a social life. But it's great to see them make good decisions now. My son will go and have pizza, maybe fast food. And then the next day, I'm like, what are you eating? He's like, I just went a little overboard yesterday. And I'm like, wow, you're saying, Donnie, you're—
How old is he now? Is he 16?
But I'm like, 16. Donnie, you're 16. You're resilient. You'll be fine. Yeah. But I love the fact that he's like, I'm like, well, why are you doing this? He goes, I just don't feel good from doing that too much. Mm. And I was like, as a parent, when it comes to that, I'm like, I did my job. And my daughter says the same thing. Granted, Amelia, it developed some weird—
The girls do.
Well, she became a pescatarian. And I was like, you know, I can't say between you and I.
Well, you can edit this out.
No, we're going to leave it in. I'll be honest, I wasn't happy. And I asked her, I said, why? She goes, it was for more humane purposes. And she didn't want to eat animals and whatever. I let her run with it. But she's, you know, eating a lot of veggies and she's, you know.
They'll learn. I think we all went through it.
Yeah.
The landscape is challenging.
It's tough.
The landscape is challenging with kids, even with our own human health. And ultimately, I mean, like I think about just all of this stuff out there, hormone replacement, people are so confused.
Well, there's a lot to be confused about. Yeah. You have so many hormones and peptides and so many different things out there. We could spend a few episodes just going through that stuff. But I think the regular basics, which I wanted to start with you today, is we really covered a lot on protein. When a vegan's contacting you.
They don't. Unless it's a threatening message or letter. No, I'm just kidding.
No, but you probably get some of
that. Tons. I don't. Yes.
So don't say I'm kidding. I mean, it's sad. It's sad that people actually have to come to that point.
And actually, I was vegan. I was vegetarian. I was vegan.
I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
How long ago was that? Long time.
College. Wow. And then my teeth started getting loose. And my hair started falling out.
Wow.
And I was training really intensely. And I couldn't recover.
You sent me a paper of all the people that were vegan that developed. I wish we could find this.
I'll be able to find it.
If you could find this, I'm going to put this up on here.
So we should publish. I did a analysis of, okay, so where were they now? And they were like all.
Let's talk about this. Yes. There was a list of 15, 20 names.
Yeah. Yep.
15 to 20 names that all went vegan.
Yep.
That were all claiming, this, and then what happened? There was a range. Range was anywhere from 1 to 3 years.
Yeah, it was like.
Every single name had either some type of bone break or ligament or tendon damage. Something went wrong.
And they all reverted back.
They all reverted back and they admitted to, but plant farms aren't
going to. I'll find that. You know, I think from a foundational principle, nutrition is key. I think that you shouldn't be snacking. We really have to have defined meals.
Yeah.
First meal, last meal, nail it. Don't be all over it. Don't be all over it. You can be all
like
over
grazing.
It.
Be like grazing
but,
and picking.
But
and
don't be all over the place. Yeah. Be disciplined. You ask me what was my first meal. Either I forget or I'll say it's a shake. It was a shake today.
Yeah. Well, you're on the road. You're also out of your comfort zone a little bit.
Yes, which is not great. But it's But I know that that's coming. So I plan for it. I'm thinking, right. Okay, so I'm going to Instacart to the room. What do I need? But less chaos, more consistency is really important. Mm-hmm. 1 gram per pound target body weight. You know, if you want, you could start with 100 grams of total carbs if you are metabolically healthy, meaning you don't have weight to lose, don't have issues with triglycerides, don't have issues with blood sugar. If you're active, you earn your carbs.
Sure. And Don Lehman said that recently too. He's like, I'm giving you a recommendation, but as you're more active, you're going to probably want to increase that.
Yeah. And I know this isn't really the point of this episode, but I want to share with you a new idea because I haven't really talked about it in the public so much. And the concept right now, as we talk about obesity, you know, 30% body fat is you're now, you know, overweight or obese, and these percentages continue to go up. I have been thinking a lot about going back and reexamining these patterns and the repetition that we talk about things. And I was on the podcast with Melanie Cree, who's the, again, that world leading expert of PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I said, you know, Melanie, who are the people that get better? What is their body fat percentage? And she's like, well, it doesn't matter their body fat percentage. It has to do with their intermuscular fat. And, you know, I don't want to throw
Can you define those differently, please?
So it's the fat that is in the muscle. It's not the subcutaneous fat. And I had this flash of insight, the same flash of insight that happened when I started the concept of muscle-centric medicine. I think we're going to get to a place where body fat percentage is not the problem.
That most important, right?
It's the intermuscular fat. It's the quality of that muscle tissue. Do you have 5% intermuscular adipose tissue? Do you have 10% intermuscular?
What's the best way to measure that?
Where it's ultrasound or MRI. We don't do that routinely. But it's that. And I think part of being a good scientist and a good clinician is you have to go back and you have to challenge what is repeated over time. I mean, body fat percentage, I think, is just another marker.
I challenge it sometimes. I think that we get a little bit carried away. There's like, I'm always pretty lean and there's times during the year where I feel phenomenal, but body fat might come up a little bit. It's not a bad thing. People look at this though, as if it is like, oh my God, you were at 6%. Now you're at 8%. It might be a very good thing, right?
I think it's the wrong metric.
I think it's the wrong metric also.
I mean, it's,
I think we obsess over it too, a little too much.
Totally.
It's very difficult to quantify.
But think about the people that we know that are fit that might not be super lean and their blood work looks great because they train.
Right.
And their diet's in check.
Right.
And it's, I believe, because their muscle quality is so good versus the 50-year-old woman who is small and lean, but she doesn't train and her muscle looks like a ribeye steak and her blood work is worse. It's this intermuscular adipose tissue that I think is going to be the next thing. Again, it's still in its infancy. There's only two labs in the country that I know that measure it. But I think that's the next thing.
Strength training is a huge part of your life.
Oh my God.
High intensity training is a huge part
of your life. So you know I'm dressed kind of fancy right now, a little fancy. You better believe that I had to stop in the gym in this outfit. If you're listening to this, I'm wearing a black lace top and some shorts that are a little short and I'm sitting on my foot because my hamstrings are killing me. You better believe I walked down there like this. Good. I did some rows.
I love it.
45 pound rows, one arm rows, a little bit of hip thrusts.
No, you've lived it.
You have to.
You've lived it and challenging. And I think not only from a muscular standpoint, but from a mental standpoint.
It's
you
all
and I
mental.
Talk about it. Yeah, 100%.
It's a bi-directional relationship. Strength is bi-directional.
Yeah. Can you explain that a little
bit? Yeah. Physical strength begets mental strength.
Mental strength.
It's a bi-directional relationship. A strong body cannot exist with a weak mind.
I agree.
And a weak mind will never create a strong body.
I think a lot of coaches actually got it wrong for years. Because if someone wasn't training for a specific sport or something specific, I would have them turn to me and say, you don't have a goal. And I'd say like, and I'm done with baseball. You have to have a goal. And I always disagree with them. I've gotten into arguments with them. I go, my goal is a feeling. My goal is whatever that program is and whatever I'm committing to is to leave there that given day feeling like I've challenged myself and I've executed every repetition of the workout to the highest of my ability. And by doing that, there was a switch in my head.
I mean, I see it. I know when you are, I mean, you have that switch and you go to, I don't want to say a dark place, but you go
sometimes
an intense place and you've trained your body and mind to be able to do that.
100%. But I think that I'm not saying everyone has to get there, but I think you have to train yourself. Well,
they do. And it's not about setting a goal. It's about setting a standard. That's why you don't have goals. I don't have physical goals, but you better believe I have physical standards.
No, but you're in there training like you do. Training for you is not about this or this. It's about this. I see you train with, she trains with this guy, Carlos, in Texas, who's
a
great coach, great facility. And when you go in there and I see your posts and I see your pictures go up and I've seen you train.
Oh, yeah.
You don't fuck around.
I do not.
No, this is, and even if it's, even if you don't have time.
I didn't have time. I'm in my
I'm going.
Dress clothes. You better believe that I'm thinking, okay, so I brought my gym shoes. What are we going to do? But it is about setting a physical standard.
Yeah.
I never want to be in a position where I'm not physically capable to do what needs to be done.
Yep.
And maybe it's because we're a military family, or maybe it is whatever it is, but you better believe if there is an emergency, I am physically prepared
to be able to
be able to lift both of my children. You know, you don't just train under duress. You train when things are good so you can perform in uncertainty and chaos. Mm-hmm. You train in the good times. And I truly do believe this. And it is how, you know, in part how I live my life. And I just have to think in, and again, it might sound morbid, but we live in a tough environment, man.
Oh, you never know what's going to happen. We've seen some sick stuff.
Exactly.
Preparation's important.
So why wouldn't I be prepared to be able to physically move my children and them know how to execute that as well?
Yep.
So that's why I train. I train for life, not for performance. You know, I wrote that ethos, which he liked, which I was very nervous to read.
Love that.
But it is, that's why we do things, because we, you know, we get better with adversity.
Do you remember the ethos off the top of your head?
I can try.
Give it to me.
All right.
This was strong. This is, yeah. Gabrielle.
You're always my barometer. I'll always.
No, but Gabrielle did this at her event a few weeks ago. But I think if you really listen to the words.
I'll try.
Try. Okay. And I'm not expecting you to hit it. This is tough.
Muscle is the organ of longevity. Strength is a responsibility, not a luxury. Aging is inevitable, but weakness is a choice. And then I don't remember the rest.
All right,
something about,
We'll jump back into later. I can't believe you remember that much. But you started saying it started clicking in my head, and I thought it was interesting. And I thought it set a strong example.
I mean, it is about I think it was parts of it was through discipline and clear intention. I'll have to read it, but the essence is, again, we have this idea that muscle as the metabolic organ is this vanity, this health thing, but it is the most unique organ mm-hmm. system that we have because of its relationship to mental fortitude. If, you know, physical and mental freedom come from this bi-directional relationship.
People made fun of it for years. I mean, we see commercials out, we see people choking around, flexing. I'm like, it is so far beyond that if you're really looking at it for the right reasons.
I mean, think about the Spartans.
Yeah.
Think about the gymnasium.
Yeah.
The history of the gymnasium. Yeah. People would get there and train naked.
Yeah.
And it was this idea that it doesn't matter what your status was. You take everything off. I mean, I don't know what they did with certain body parts. I mean, that seems like that a broad jump would be really difficult, or a box jump, like, man. But, there was a lot of respect for this physical prowess and strength. And we've lost that over the last 100 years.
People are starting to see some articles out there, CEOs, fitness and strength. And, you know, I wonder, I am starting to see people more self health conscious. I am starting to see more people drinking less. That's become a bit more accepted now, which I'm thrilled about.
Which you've been saying forever.
Yeah. But like, this is, I'm starting to see a turn for the positive.
And then there's one more layer to that.
What's
and that?
That
is, attributes and characteristics of how, you know, and I talk to you a lot about this, about how we live our life. Internal character is expressed externally by actions. And that might sound a little woo-woo, which I'm not.
I mean,
I'm a fellowship-trained doctor married to a Navy SEAL surgeon.
Yeah.
And there are really important aspects of health. We talk about it in buckets, but it's not, it is this interwoven thread through life that will create individuals that can make meaningful contributions. And that's what this is. It's about tuning out the noise, executing with a clear intention so that you can show up for your family.
Yeah. When you start looking at it that way, suddenly removing that vanity metric and really thinking about how that could contribute to the
well-being
of your family, it's a standard.
But it's a standard. And it takes a lot of introspection to be able to get there, to really get there, to really get there from a character standpoint and a physical standpoint and a mental standpoint. It doesn't happen by accident. And even
you believe it's got to be trained though, right? Sometimes it has to be trained
yeah. mentally. There's a health doesn't happen by being passive. You don't build strength without intention. And you don't become a better person by accident.
No.
And all of those things take cultivation. And they're not separate.
That's where we're missing the mark, though, I think. I think most people will think that that's something that they just have to have, right? Like, oh, well, I used to hear this all the time. Don, I just want to want it.
When people say, I just want to want it, they're not asking the right questions.
Right.
There are other, that's not the right question.
What would you say is the right question? You got to think about that a little bit, right?
Well, I mean, we are now in a world where I think the biggest disease is comfort. I don't think it's heart disease. I don't think it's Alzheimer's disease. I think we have this deep disease of comfort. And we don't even remember what it's like to be faced with challenges that are almost insurmountable. And we don't run towards those anymore. And so when someone asks, I just want to want it, they are in a disease of comfort.
Right.
And I guarantee you, until they get out of it and until they begin to really put themselves in austere positions,
it's not going to change.
It will never change.
That I agree.
And they will always want to want it.
It's almost like a comment where someone's like giving up, like, I just don't have it.
But it's a disease of discomfort, yeah. And it's so deep and it's so insidious that I guarantee you, it is not just defined to training.
Mm.
It will, if you uncover the rocks in their life.
Oh, it's probably other things. Yeah, 100%.
You know, and as a geriatrician, so the deal was, in order for me to do nutritional sciences, I had to work as a geriatrician. You know that, right? Like, that was the deal.
Yeah, you did mention that.
That was the deal. I did not want to do geriatrics. I'm like, are you kidding me? Facing death every day, hard freaking pass.
Yeah, Jesus.
But in order for me to get fellowship trained in nutrition, I had to do geriatrics, which is 65 and there are weeks where you're doing end of life care. I'm seeing 30 dying patients a day. But in order to get the education I wanted, that was a sacrifice. Over time, there are things that you learn sitting with these people. And you know the biggest one? It's regret. Regret about the things that they didn't do and the actions that they never took and the life that they never led.
Right. It's sad when you think about it now. It's like it's too late.
But what can we learn from our elders?
Yep.
What can we learn from them? And I think you've got to be able to train yourself to turn it on.
Yeah, you have to.
Making it count now.
Yeah, you got to do it. You got to go for it.
You got to go for it.
You got, and that's kind of where I want to kick it to the next. So we have a couple guests that are going to ask us some live questions. By the way, there's no shot in hell you're only coming on this once. So the when you eventually take another trip into New York, we're just going to
plan it. We really want to spend more time with you guys. Yeah,
and Mel and I and the kids, 100%. And we're going to. But Chris.
Do we get to see the caller?
Yes. And I'd like to introduce you to Chris. Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, you know how special she is to me. And I'm excited. Who do we have on today?
Scott. Scott is a challenger from Iowa. I'm going to go ahead and let Scott ask his question. So go ahead, Scott.
Hey, Scott. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Scott.
My question is, I'm 7'1". I recently changed careers from, I was working in physical therapy, and now I actually work in a gym where I train lifeguards for rescues and stuff like that. So I'm active all the time. I run ultra marathons, and I'm currently doing your Hellboy program as well. So on average, you know, I'll run 8 to 10 miles a day and then spend 4 to 5 hours in a pool. So I can't put muscle mass on to save my life.
Yes.
That's my big problem.
Yeah. The amount of activity that you are doing is tremendous. And for you, it's going to be a calorie thing. Mm. Your overall calories are going to have to be tremendous. And, you know, you'll have to calculate kind of or get an idea of what that is and really begin to push those limits.
I started using carbon after I heard Don talk about it on his Instagram. So I've been tracking it that way.
How many calories are you at?
And it says it's still pretty low. I'm at about 3,500 a day, and I need to be probably close to twice that.
I agree. And you will be very interesting because your percentage of protein will be high no matter what. For example, if you are at a 4,000 calorie diet, which is probably going to be too low for you, if I was a guessing woman, I would say it's probably closer to 6,000 calories. And for you, you're going to have to choose very nutrient dense foods. However, when I say nutrients, high calorically dense foods, but the interesting thing is you will need carbs because you're going through so much glycogen, and probably your diet will probably end up being 20% protein, but because your calories will be high enough, the overall number will be adequate.
And listen, I think the challenge also becomes about what type of foods to consume. And I used to laugh because remember Michael Phelps, when he was consuming his 12,000 calories a day, I'm not saying to go eat General Chow's chicken five times a day, but like in a way he had to get his calories so high. So what would you recommend? Yeah. Because it starts getting difficult. Like I said, eating sweet potato to get it's impossible. No. You're not going to do it.
And this is actually something that we've talked about. Sure. You'll have to put together some kind of shake.
Like
and
a protocol or something.
Yep. So this is where I would use. What were we using for a while? We were using not dextrose. We were using some kind of soluble corn.
Oh, we were using Vitargo or no? Was it Vitargo or Ucan or there was some different carb mixes that worked really well. And we don't have any deals with these companies. We're just throwing it out there.
But calorie density is going to be your biggest thing. And I would also say choosing things that have a good nutrient profile. So I'm going to specify. Rather than what Michael Phelps was doing, which was a lot of calories, calories is the first base level. But then there are things like, let's say you're doing a shake, but you're also adding in things like maquia berry or anthocyanins, because you are generating a lot of inflammation, reactive oxygen species to help your recovery. And what I would say is, you know, let's say it was, and I'm not saying pie filling, right? I don't mean that, but something that is like tart cherry with a carb. So
you know what
have
I
to
add?
Get creative.
You know what? You know some of the ways that I get creative, and please, like I'm learning from you.
Honey.
Here.
So like honey.
Oh my God. Yeah. That one.
Manicora.
Manicora makes a great honey. I'll use like dates.
Yes.
Because I can I can consume 5 dates is almost 100 grams of carbs. Yep. And I can eat dates. Like I can eat. Same. So like 5 dates right there can cover 100 grams
with
of carbs.
With peanut butter. So I put, I really struggle to get calories in because I'm moving around. I'm not thinking about it. And so what I do is I'll travel with dates with peanut butter.
Obviously getting in protein shakes, but then like, you know, I would get a little sweet potato, but it's not enough. Then I would it's not enough.
What
do
you do for hockey?
I would use like jasmine rice. I would hockey. I'm sorry. I use the honey.
Yeah.
I'll still use oats, but I'll mix honey in it. I'll mix peanut butter or almond butter, and I'll make it into like a mud bowl. But like, you know what too? Like if I have to, let's say I had to hit 600 grams of carbs a day.
My husband uses gels.
Yeah. What would you think about like, don't yell at me for this, but like pierogies and stuff like that on top of
great.
It. Yeah, I like pierogies. Like I would use that sometimes. My body would respond really well to it and I would never feel bloated.
That. I could see that.
But it had a lot of potato and a little bit of a pasta. Totally so I would consume six pierogies was like 85 grams of carbs. So think about it. Six pierogies came out to like 85 grams of carbs. Then five dates came out to almost 100. That's almost 200 grams of carbs just from those two easy sources to get down.
And I would say if you're competitive, you're going to have to get really dialed in. Because it's, again, we talked about how it's not going to happen haphazardly. You're going to have to really look at, like, Don, I know I've been working with him for years. And I know hockey season, we're hitting, I don't know, we might go 450 grams of carbs. And you better believe higher.
Yeah.
We're higher now.
Yeah.
Because there's a point last year where I ran a 100-mile race every weekend in September. So I ran 400 miles in the month of September just on the weekends. And I dropped probably 15 pounds during
that. What happened to your body comp? Do you feel like that you got softer?
I leaned out, so I don't think I lost muscle mass in terms of body composition wise, but I just dropped everything. Like I felt weaker.
What was your energy? That's a lot. How was your energy? I just have to ask.
I mean, my energy stayed pretty consistent, but I could tell that running wise, I could keep it up, but in the weights in the gym, I just couldn't push it.
I think you got to be careful with Hellboy, right? And what I would recommend is some of the volume may have to taper back, and some of the bilateral work I would be careful with. I really think that you need to kind of gauge how you're feeling and more of the unilateral work, more of the split stance stuff. Some of the carries work that's in there, I love because especially with the one arm. Asymmetrical work, fantastic. I would just be careful with the volume and some of the heavier bilateral stuff isn't meant to fit in with that type of training. But again, I work with an ultra runner now for 5 years. We've had an incredible level of success with resistance training on top of running. She runs a lot. We have to gauge and we're in constant communication in my challenger group. I'm gifting you my next challenge. I am gifting you. Sierra's going to reach out to Chris. I am gifting you June. Okay. Because you'll be able to communicate with me 5 days a week in a group and I'm going to help you dial us in.
Okay. Sweet.
It's on me. You're not paying for anything. She's going to gift you. I'm going to dial you in. I probably have too much to go through. All right.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, go please. It's perfect.
So you're jumping into suffering. And I think that that's a lot of what we were talking about, this idea of pushing yourself and putting yourself into uncomfortable positions, because that's, you can never plan for the chaos and uncertainty of life. But what you can do is prepare yourself, and doing things like this sounds crazy, 100 miles. I have so much respect for that.
A week he did. He did through that month. He did 400 miles that month.
But that's really being able to dip into discomfort. And that's, I think that's what's really needed. If we're going to change this culture that we're seeing, that's what we need.
Scott, I love you for it, man. That's fantastic. I mean, the mental piece of it to me is the most important. Let's just hone in it a little bit right now. Sure. Let's, you start, if you have that work ethic.
The pain cave, right?
I like that name, by the way.
The pain cave.
Right.
Scott, we got you.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Pleasure, buddy. I love that. That's, that guy's wired. 7-1 running 100.
That's unbelievable.
He said he ran an ultra every week on the weekend for 4 weeks.
But I bet you he has to be someone who's probably planned his body to be. He must be.
He's 7-1.
I don't even know.
I've never even heard of that. 7'1". That's like 3 feet taller than you.
That's like right by me.
Chris, who do you got next?
All right. Coming up next, we have Michelle in Minnesota. And Michelle, I believe, is a challenger as well. Michelle, here you're on with Gabrielle and Don.
Hi, Michelle.
How are you?
Awesome. Happy to have you on and fire your question off. We'll let G take it. I might add my 2 cents. I'm not sure.
I have an eating disorder called ARFID. And it's like my diet is really restricted. Mm. So I miss out on a lot of like key nutrients and stuff that my body needs. Mm. But I was wondering, like, as I'm slowly venturing out into trying new foods and stuff, how can I create like a healthy eating habits that I can slowly work towards to maintain in the long run?
Well, first of all, Michelle, I have to say it's very brave of you to be approaching this head on. And some people spend their whole life never addressing it. So I have no doubt that you will be able to be successful with that.
Thank you.
So the biggest thing that I would say is that you choose a food that does not perpetuate any kind of trigger. Do you know what I mean? So sometimes, yeah. So you would have to dip your toe into it, and it really should not be a very triggering food. So that might be a protein shake. That might be the one thing that you add in, but something very simple, non-triggering. I'm really proud of you. It's tough.
Yeah, it is. And just like lately I've introduced like protein drinks and stuff.
Perfect.
But even that's hard to find stuff that I like.
So once you find it, and it's mm-hmm. good because you have access to it all online, right? Then yeah. then that would be the next step. So it's you and I were in alignment with that next choice.
I'm in alignment too. And at least I'm a part of it because I know she's part of the challenges. So you could communicate with me and we could talk about it a bit. And though Gabrielle's the real boss when it comes to this stuff, this is her wheelhouse. I think just, you know, having me as a sounding board and kind of an accountability tracker, you know what I'm
saying? Do you have a physician yeah. you're working with or a support system?
I don't have like a therapist or anything or like a dietitian or anything, but like my boyfriend and my parents really push me to do stuff.
Okay. Well, just know that there's always help, and especially online, there are mm-hmm. There are things that are extremely cost effective that, you know, there is BetterHelp. There's all kinds of therapy that is available online for very low cost.
Michelle, what we'll do is you communicate with me, and if I have any questions, I'll bounce it off of G over here, and we'll get back to you with a good resource, okay? But I want you to keep in touch with us, all right?
Okay.
Good luck.
Bye, Michelle.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye.
Great seeing you.
You too.
Sweetie.
That's tough.
It's tough. And I think a lot of people have to be careful in that situation, because even me, like I wouldn't feel comfortable. You never know what's going to trigger or what you're going to say. That's someone. She needs to be speaking to someone.
Yeah.
Chris, you want to go hit the last one?
Do we have another question? The questions are fun. We love doing this.
You
love
the
Q&A. It's so fun.
Those are our two callers.
That was it. Perfect.
Chris, do you have a question?
Chris, do you have a
question? Yeah. I do have a question. Okay. I do have a question.
Fire it off quick.
Yes.
How do you recommend for someone, myself, who is a social drinker? You know, a lot of my social activities revolve around, you know, going out and having a margarita, you know, few times a week, or, you know, doing things. I'm trying to figure out how to be more responsible.
I love that.
With alcohol, mm-hmm. because I'm 42, and as I'm getting older, I just know that it sets me back.
It's hard.
Yeah. I love this.
And so I'm trying to think through, you know, you talked about suffering, you know, in regards to, you know, kind of, I don't know, suffering and comfort, right? And I know that alcohol plays so much into comfort and trying to comfort ourselves. And I just wanted to kind of hear you talk about
that. I love this question. I love this question. You are, by thinking about it in this way, you're actually preparing for what you know is coming.
Yeah.
You know the days that you go out, and you know when you're going to be going out, you're going to interface with the desire to drink.
Yeah.
The thing that I would say to do is, number one, the first thing that you're doing is asking the question, is run through the scenario with visualization. You have to have a plan so that you can withstand contact with the enemy. Mm. You have to game plan it out now. So the question would be, you know, you're going out, what day is today? Monday, Tuesday, Monday. So when do you go out next?
I'd say probably, let's say Thursday.
And you know where you're going, and you know the time you go?
Yeah.
And you know exactly who comes over and asks you for, do you want a drink?
Yeah.
So now you have to think, what's the next thing that you're going to do? So if you're playing this through and you're practicing before, if you mm-hmm. can practice before you get into the situation, you'll be ready to engage in it.
Now, let me ask you this. My brother-in-law is coming into town in July, and July 4th.
But wait, are we skipping through the margarita? Because I want you to practice this because it's happening Thursday.
This is related. This is related.
I'm ready.
So my brother-in-law is coming in around July 4th, and we have a tradition of enjoying tiki cocktails. And so in my mind, I'm thinking like, okay, well, I want to have at least one or two with him at that period of time. Is it the same thing of thinking through like, when can I have a drink, or is it always trying to restrict?
Nope. Now you got to come up with a contract and a standard you make for yourself, and we do it now. So the deal is, how many drinks are you going to have? What is going to be contractually? What are you good with? And that's you follow that. And if you don't follow it, you have a consequence.
Chris, she's right about this. I'm not a drinker. Yeah. There's three times a year where I might indulge. I can tell you right now, when I go to Switzerland, because I love the beer, right? Yeah. There's a holiday trip to Nashville, and then one Christmas dinner that we have. So it's literally three times a year I might have a couple beers. That's kind of my deal. I don't exceed that. I don't want to exceed that. What she's saying right now is come up with a contract in your head. I'm not going to stop.
Guardrails.
Yeah, there's got to be some. There's got to be some structure here.
Chris, how many drinks are you going to have on Thursday?
On Thursday? Well, I was going to say zero.
is that going to be realistic?
Is that realistic?
I think it's realistic for Thursday.
Great. So do zero.
So you plan it, but you can't just say you're going to have zero. So you have to plan in your mind that this is what you're wearing. You're going to this bar. This is the person that asked you. You see yourself ordering one drink. And now the other thing that I want you to do is, if you choose not to do that, you're 42 right now. Every time you make that choice to have that drink or do the thing that you know is not in alignment, what is your life going to look like from a year from now, continuing to make that choice?
And what is my life going to look like a year from now, or 5 years from now, or 10 years
from
now?
No. You're only surface answering that. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
There was a period of time where I had just had my baby. So my first daughter, or my only daughter, but my daughter. And I was, for whatever reason, I was like obsessing about what people were thinking. It wasn't, maybe it was like postpartum or something.
Yeah,
I was spending so much time doing that I wasn't accomplishing the things that I needed to do. And maybe it was a way of being stressed out or whatever it was. But if I had continued that behavior, then for another year, I would never be able to get my book done. I would never be, the consequences and the outcomes were so devastating that if I couldn't enforce some kind of discernment on what I was doing and the thoughts I was having, I was never going to be able to reach the targets that I wanted. And that's devastating. So if you know that on Thursday you actually have more than one drink, and you know that drinking, we know it's a risk factor for Alzheimer's, you have a greater than a 17 and a half inch neck by looking at you, which means by definition, you probably have sleep apnea. You combine that with all of those things. If your dad had any kind of heart disease or vascular dementia, that is the direction you're going.
All right.
So the question is, how many drinks are you going to have on Thursday? Probably one or none, but whatever it is, you plan, and then you plan for the alternative. Maybe you're going to have a Diet Coke. I don't care. But you have to put something in place.
I'll check with you on Friday, Chris.
That was an intense answer. I know that was an intense answer, but if you really want movement, you really want a strategy to get it done, that is the strategy to get done. I've been doing this for a long time as a doc.
Great.
So it's so tough with you to cover one topic, right? So today I really just wanted to almost do an overview of who you are. And you know what? It really did go in a phenomenal direction, because what do we end up talking about? Protein and an overall strength, health, well-being.
I mean, building better humans, becoming more resilient.
That's it.
And having character.
Yeah, which is so important. And I think in this day and age, it's almost overlooked. We're looking too much at the numbers, and we're not really looking at the person. And it's honestly, at the end of the day, we were at hour 45 into this recording
today.
We
could talk forever.
It's a sickness, because we can just keep going and going.
We are hilarious. I was like, okay, bye. I call you in the morning.
That's kind of how we end up. Someone's here. Bye. Click. I love you. And I want to close it on that. I'm grateful. People will never understand how important you are to Mel and I and my kids, and just we got a lot to do. So thank you for this today.
I always have your back. And I have to say, you are one of the most special humans I know.
Thank you.
And I would say I believe in you.
Thank you.
And I know what you're here to do. So thanks for having me.
I'll give you a hug on when we get out of the chair. Thanks, guys.
The views, information, or opinions expressed in this series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Chip and Joanna Gaines, Blind Nell Audio, nor Magnolia.